Of course, Santa is the big guy. He wears a red suit, rides a sleigh led by a bunch of reindeer, and brings presents to kids on Christmas Eve. But he wasn't always like that. And a little later, we'll be looking into his religious origins with Santa expert Justine Van Morick. Saint A. Claus was first mentioned in print in 1773 in a newspaper in Dutch-founded New York. The image of Santa continued to develop throughout the 19th century, and his mythology was well and truly established by 1931, when Coca-Cola adopted him as a means to sell cold drinks in winter. In modern Australia, he's more related to shopping and presents than he is to religion, and he is still being used to sell things. I'm here at Burwood Westfields watching a parade that's been organised to mark the arrival of Santa Claus to the shopping centre. A small crowd of kids and their parents has gathered in the mall to welcome the jolly fat man. This is Santa in Australia today. Santa's entourage includes a series of beautiful white furry Samoyed dogs. There's Mrs. Claus, there's a Christmas rabbit, as well as a man-sized branded battery, and there's Rudolph. They're led by a three-piece jazz band. So we've just been stuck on an elevator waiting for the elevator to be restarted again, and we've lost Santa. The kids are waiting. We're now power walking through the food court on track, trying to find Santa again. Oh, we just found Santa. He's gone through the food court and we've caught up to him again. A bit like the Pied Piper, we're sort of gathering children as we go through the shopping centre. They're following the parade with their parents, who occasionally pull aside the rabbit or the battery for a quick photo shoot with their kids. Santa is finally taking a seat in his glorious sleigh, sitting in front of a gigantic Christmas tree, ready for the photos to begin. But before shopping malls, before Santa's American origins, surely kids weren't left empty-handed in the holiday period. Enter Saint Nick. We usually hear this as an alternate name for Santa, but it's really a shortening for Saint Nicholas of Myra, the patron saint of children. He was a 4th century Christian bishop, and he lived in what is now Turkey. Saint Nicholas was the origin of the American Santa Claus, but he still survives in his own right across Europe. Many Australians of European descent continue his tradition. I spoke with Justine Van Morick from Canberra, and we attempted to trace the rocky path that Santa has taken from ancient bishop to symbol of modern consumerism.
I think my interest in Santa comes from the fact that most people don't know that he is Dutch. I'm claiming him. There'll probably be angry callers from other countries. But the word Santa Claus comes from the Dutch Sinterklaas, which comes from St. Nicholas.
So are you Dutch yourself?
I am. My father was Dutch, or is Dutch.
And did you grow up in Australia or did you grow up in the Netherlands?
I grew up in Australia, but I did grow up with the Sinterklaas tradition. St. Nicholas Day is the 6th of December, it's not the 25th of December. And so on the evening of the 5th of December, you would put out your shoes, or in my case, little red wooden clogs. And Sinterklaas would come, and if you had been good, he would fill them with oranges and nuts and those wonderful gold coins that have chocolate inside them.
And if you were bad?
If you were bad, Sinterklaas actually had a helper called Schwarte Piet, and if you were bad, he would ask Piet to leave you a lump of coal or a birch switch so you could be spanked. But Schwarte Piet really was Sinterklaas's helper. He carried and lugged the goods for St. Nicholas, and he also carried a large book in which St. Nicholas would write down whether or not children had been good or bad, and depending on which, then Schwarte Piet would give you either a present or a lump of coal.
And did you ever get a lump of coal in your clogs?
No, I didn't. But I do actually have a friend who is, her family are Hungarian, and they have a similar tradition. They have Schwarte Piet. And I think one year her brother was very bad and a lump of coal appeared.
Did you have a religious upbringing, Justine?
Not particularly. My mother's family is Salvation Army, so again at Christmas time that was another ritual tradition, would be to go to Christmas Eve with the Salvation Army, and obviously the 5th of December was St. Nicholas, which was important to my father.
Did the traditions ever compete in your family? Did one take prominence?
No, I don't think so. And in fact, many Dutch families celebrate both St. Nicholas Day and Christmas. St. Nicholas Day is about getting gifts, and Christmas, again, is about the arrival of the Christ child. So they're actually two separate events in the Dutch calendar.
What did Sinterklaas look like in the Dutch tradition?
Sinterklaas was a bishop, so he appears as you would expect a bishop to appear, with a mitre, with a red robe, and with a crook or a crozier, which he holds in his hand.
Now, we've already mentioned that Sinterklaas is the Dutch name for St. Nicholas. Tell me a little bit about St. Nicholas and where that figure comes from.
St. Nicholas is actually a 4th century saint from around the Greek-Turkish border. The legends surrounding St. Nicholas were that he would give gifts. There was one story where he gave gifts to young women whose father could not afford a dowry, and he would throw the money in through the window.
Whereabouts across Europe is St. Nicholas practiced? How widespread is this practice?
St. Nicholas is in particular in Catholic countries, so in Italy, Malta, those kinds of countries. He's venerated much the same as other saints. He has his own day. Throughout Middle and Eastern Europe, St. Nicholas in his various guises is still celebrated, but particularly the Dutch tradition is still very, very strong.
So how did he manage to survive the Protestant Reformation, which obviously took a bit of a negative eye towards the saints?
I think he managed to survive because by that time, the ritual of gift-giving on St. Nicholas Day was actually more about accounting for your actions during the year. It was about whether or not you had been good or bad. We weren't venerating an icon. It was about a reckoning of whether or not you'd been good or bad during the year. Did you get coal? Did you get oranges?
What are some of the other figures that lie behind the current figure of Santa Claus?
The Norse and Scandinavian mythologies feed into the Santa Claus figure, particularly Odin. He rode a giant eight-legged steed, a giant flying horse, if you will, and he would fly around, and if children left food or hay for the steed, he would reward them with presents. So it's a very similar tradition, and we think that maybe the eight-legged flying horse then sort of morphed into the eight reindeer.
What about Father Christmas?
Father Christmas is a British tradition, and I think it's partially based on St. Nicholas, but I think it's also partially based on things like Dickens' A Christmas Carol, that spirit of Christmas. And he's traditionally depicted in a green robe, not a red one, but much the same figure, jolly, you know, rosy cheeks, beard. So those traditions, I think they borrow from one another, but Father Christmas is very much a British tradition.
Okay, so now we've got so many background figures now. When and how and where did these sort of crystallise into Santa Claus?
Santa was first used as a term in 1773 and in America. So Santa Claus comes directly from Sinterklaas, but it was actually coined in America, and it's much more recent than people might think. In 1890, in fact, was the first department store Santa Claus, and it's amazing that it was that early.
So really, Santa Claus is an American invention.
He is. He's very much an American invention. Even the look of Santa, the red suit, the boots, the belt, that is as a consequence of American illustrators like Thomas Nast, who drew him that way, because up until then he'd been depicted in a number of, you know, he was short, he was tall, he wore green, he wore brown. You know, he'd been depicted in many different ways, but that particular illustration of Santa began to gain momentum as the image of Santa.
There's a popular urban myth that states that Coca-Cola created Santa Claus, or at the very least created him in the form that he currently has. But we haven't mentioned Coke at all, so what's the role of that?
They didn't create that image of Santa. That was, as I said before, the American illustrator Thomas Nast created that image of Santa in the red suit with the white trim, the jolly face and the beard. What Coke did was they realised that their sales were not good during winter. They were perceived as a cold drink and very much a summer drink. So they came up with a marketing campaign where they used that image of Santa and said, you know, Coke is a festive drink. It's for all year round. So basically it was to sell Coke during winter was the reason that they adopted this image of Santa drinking Coke, which is now in various incarnations become incredibly collectible.
All of these mythical figures, do you think that they reflect in some way the culture that gave rise to them?
I think they do. I think what we've possibly lost over that time is that sense of Santa is the accounting or the reckoning of your behaviour during the year. I mean, we've, you know, there are Christmas carols where they talk about whether you've been naughty or nice. But, you know, we don't really go in for that ritual anymore. I mean, Santa doesn't have an off-sider other than some reindeer. If we're not saying that, you know, actions have consequences, then he's sort of lost importance a little bit. It's like he's a jolly fat man who gives presents to everyone regardless of what they've done.
Justine Van Morick, thank you for being with us and Merry Christmas.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.